So now let me introduce one of the most sought-after tenors in the world. He's here at the Met, starring in Donizetti's Le Désir d'Amore, opening next Thursday, Vittorio Grigolo.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for welcoming me. I'm really, really happy to be here, Gerald. And actually, I'm thrilled. And really, I have to say that you read very well.
Thank you.
And thank you, everybody, for welcoming me. And I hope that this applause was not fake, but was from your heart.
Well, it's hard to believe after that introduction, but this is your first comedy at the Met.
That's why I'm starting like this. I read that line and I said, oh, that's your first comedy at the Met. And actually I said, that's why I need to make the people a little bit, a bit laugh. And but, you know, the reason is that when an actor, I made you cry many times here at the Met with my roles. I hope so. And so I think that when a man, that he brings his passion and his lives into a role, a theatrical role, and a personaggio. Basically, I think that a man that can, and an actor that can make you cry, it's also an actor and a man that can make you smile. But it's even more difficult to make you smile.
Well, of course, Nemorino is not just.
But
a
we
funny
say,
guy.
Oh, I know. Sorry, yeah, we no, say that on. A man that makes you smile, you will never forget it. So maybe it's better that I start making you smile.
Indeed. So Nemorino is not just a funny guy. He has moments of true depth, like the famous actu aria Una furtiva lagrima. Yep. And that will be the subject of our vocal ID round. We're going to play you a passage that goes from minor to major as Nemorino realizes Adina loves him. It will be sung by three of Vittorio's favorite tenors from the past, three very different interpretations. Mm-hmm. So may we hear the first one, please? George, you had your hand up first.
I'm going to say Beniamino Gigli.
And you would be correct. So, Vittorio, can you comment on why you chose that one particularly? What was special about it for you?
First of all, because I remember a real scene that happened in San Carlo to Commendatore Gigli, because Gigli was made Commendatore of Italy. And a little guy at San Carlo from the chorus, behind the scene, just walk towards Gigli before the moment of Una furtiva lagrima. And I always bring this anecdote into my heart to remember how important it is to make things always fresh. And the guy came up to the maestro, the great maestro, and said, Commendatore, perché tremate? Why are you shaking your hands? He had a drink in his hands and he was shaking before singing Una furtiva lagrima. I said, you've sang this aria a million times. I can't believe you, Beniamino Gigli, shaking, maestro. Come on, this little kid. And Beniamino Gigli looked at the kid from the chorus and said, it's always the first time. So that's why.
Okay. So, excerpt number two, please. George is the only one with your hand up.
Tito Schipa.
Correct. You would like to say briefly why you chose that one?
Go ahead, George. I was thinking you raise your hands just to clean your nose, but it's fine. This guy is amazing, man.
I multitask. What this, can I tell
today,
you?
Today, George, when I listen to the radio tape that I chose yesterday, I run them all, so it's good that I chose this, actually. I want to tell you why I chose this. Because the reason why I think that everybody that is sitting here knows the reason, and it was that beautiful pianissimo we heard that Gigli, unfortunately, and I say unfortunately because the mezze voci and the grace that Gigli used to have in this piece is not in this recording we picked, but he usually does the same that Tito in this record of Una Furtiva did, that beautiful mezza voce and pianissimo, and keep the note. And the people are on the chair. Oh my God, he's coming down. Is he coming down or not? So that's what makes the people, you know, get lift, you know, a little bit from the chair and makes the attention. So that's why I choose the
okay.
piece.
So excerpt number 3. Jonathan?
Is it Richard Tucker?
It's not, but you've got the right national.
Ah, no! Public! Oh.
Well, don't make it worse.
Okay. Suzanne?
I'm probably dead wrong, no, but is it Mario Lanza?
It is indeed.
Okay.
Brava.
Trick question.
So, Jonathan Tollins.
No.
Public?
Oh.
It's okay. I'm just making it. I like it.
I knew it was an American tenor.
Actually, can I correct you? It's Italo-American. But that's why we're always there. But I chose Lanza because it's an incredible story. First of all, he died at my age today. It's one of the greatest voice, I think, of opera that doesn't have the chance because it was... His story is incredible. The story of this of Mario, it's incredible. I would like to tell you just a little things that is very. If any one of you knows that Mario Lanza born the day that Caruso died, and his mother thought that that Mario was actually the resurrection of Caruso. I'm not kidding. And his mother was singing opera to him every single day, this little kid. So she really truly believed that that guy was the incarnation, the reincarnation of Caruso's voice. And so much she believed it that the guy, when he came up, he grew up, he believed it in himself. So I think faith is one of the, beliefs. True beliefs are important, you know? And this is an explanation. I will go on Mario Lanza because it's an incredible story, but it's so beautiful.
We have 3 minutes left.
3 minutes left? Okay, but it's very interesting to know that he was one of the, for me, one of the, even though on this piece I choose it because we can really see the temperamento, the difference. This is that it looks like he's Radames, you know. Un esercito di fenomeni da ben guidato. He's singing Una Furtiva Lagrima like, like that kind of energy. But that's the energy of that time. That's the energy that Mario always had in his character, in his soul, in his blood. And I think that this is important because it's a key of... a passaggio of a certain change also in music in the late let's say is late 40s to the 50s and then the 60s we had any other great tenors like Caruso but Corelli and Del Monaco, but of course Lanza was one of them, and even though he didn't perform so many opera, he went to the movies and you know all the story.
Well, he was largely responsible, I think, for bringing opera to the general public who don't often wouldn't go to an opera, which brings me to the next point, which is similar to the three tenors who bring opera to the public who don't normally go, who enjoy the hits. Yep. In terms of reaching new audiences, what do you think of this, panelists? The accessibility of bringing the general public who might know the hit but who don't know the rest of the opera.
Well, everything, I mean, all exposure is good. I think some of us who are old and kind of curmudgeonly just hope that the standard of singing that becomes popular, that the people are exposed to, it continues to be of a high level. I only get worried when I hear bad singing sort of popularizing great opera.
Mm-hmm. George.
I have to agree with Jonathan. Really, it's a kind of a weird analogy, but great singing is the nicotine in the cigarette of opera, right? It's
strange
the drug that hooks us. No, I'm not at all. But if you don't have that, people might come and see an interesting production, and they might applaud the scenery and so on and so forth. But it is a great singer and a spectacular voice that keeps us coming back again and again.
Indeed.
I'll agree with both Jonathan and George. I mean, Jose Carreras is on record as saying that Mario Lanza brought him to study voice and become an opera singer. So.
Indeed. So those chimes tell us it's time to return to Lauren Toulagian in the radio booth for Act 2 of Puccini's Manon Lescaut. Thanks to our panelists, Suzanne Martinucci, George Preston, and Jonathan Tolans, and a special thanks to our wonderful guest, Vittorio Grigolo.